We've done one of these. Ladies and gentlemen, we... What was that? Wasn't who was there back? That wasn't
Poltergeist.
Poltergeist, but who was the actor? The young girl. I forget her name.
No idea.
We are back with a new name. We are now upon further review.
Indeed.
With the podcast profs.
Well, it seemed appropriate given the fact that we sort of take news and then review it because Lord knows we don't make it
yet.
If we ever get to that point, we're all in real trouble.
He is Soren Fanning.
Yes, sir.
He is an associate professor of all sorts of history.
Yes.
That's what you should put on your business card. All sorts of history.
Well, ideally, I'd like to get rid of the associate professor of world history and go with friendly neighborhood historian.
That would work,
That's something I'd like to do.
That would work,
but yes,
too.
I am the associate professor of world history here at Robert Morris. And next to me, my friend, my compadre.
Friend?
Yeah. Shut up.
My
partner in all this, the Anthony Moretti.
Well, yeah, there are others of us.
Well, the one and only associate professor of journalism here at Robert Morris University.
Indeed.
So we have been off for...
Too long.
Entirely too long, but in that time we have not only gained a radio station, mm-hmm. which I never would have predicted, as well as a Cracker Jack producer, but we got music and everything, and now we have to be professional.
We're more betterer.
Indeed.
But just said professional. I can't say more betterer anymore, right?
I didn't say I'd be a skilled professional, you know.
All kidding aside, our thanks to the good folks at RMU Radio, which has agreed to host us this year, and John Rowland, who is going to graduate much too quickly. Has agreed, volunteer, drew the short end of the stick, whichever it is.
I believe the appropriate thing is that he is charitably donating his time to this little endeavor.
Which means he drew the short end of the stick.
No. Exactly. No, precisely.
John is going to be our producer, timekeeper, moral compass, or whatever the case might be as the semester unfolds. So let us begin with what is still... a disastrous presidency.
Oh, absolutely. Now, bear in mind, we've been off for 2.5 months. And
he's been off for 70 years, but that's another story altogether.
At least. But the problem we're now running into is we've said before that this president is aging us in dog years. You know, a week goes by and it feels like a month. 2.5 months since our last broadcast. And let's see what's happened. There was the attempt to repeal and replace Obamacare. Remember that?
That went splat,
which is just proof that right now the Republican Party isn't one party. It's basically two political parties conjoined at the hip.
It is, but you know what? I would make the case that I think the Democratic Party is as well. The difference is the Democrats are not in power, and so as a result...
You always look better when you're not in power.
Absolutely. So as a result, all of their dirty laundry, so to speak, is not being aired publicly.
Well, I think there's another difference. There's basically two, maybe three parties within the GOP right now.
Mm-hmm.
Within the Democrats, you've got at least 27. There's at least 27. But here's the thing. None of them are big enough to threaten to take their ball and go home if they don't get their way.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of liken it to Jell-O. You can't do much constructive with Jell-O, but then again, you can't exactly break it apart. You can smash it and just back together again.
Do that again? Great. You talk about being professional and you're making...
Well, we don't have a sound effects board here.
Yet.
We're going to need a few step increases before that goes on. But
you know, you look at healthcare failing, and ultimately healthcare failed,
mm-hmm.
meaning repeal and replace Obamacare.
Correct.
That failed for Republicans because the two or three segments of the party could not come together. And maybe more damaging for the party, it made it pretty clear that they are not going to come together.
Well, and I think there's even a further cause here. The simple fact of the matter is the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare, the problem is that was the conservative option. So by demonizing it throughout Obama's presidency, while it may have been great politics and fundraising get you elected. The problem is, well, then what are you going to replace it with? And the dirty secret is everyone knew there was nothing else. Your only option was to go back to the way things were Nobody wanted that. So now, you know, we're embarking on, you know, tax reform, they say. We'll see if it ever gets anywhere. But,
well, you know, what the Republicans also faced was the very sort of American, and it's not unique to America, that notion of once I have something, you got to give me a really good reason why you're taking it away from me. And the notion that it's going to go broke in seven years or 10 years or whatever the case might be isn't going to work when people are saying, look, if you take this away from me, and there are 23 roughly million people who are saying this, you take this away from me, I now have no health care. What do I do when I get sick?
Right. And you can argue whether or not health care should be subject to market forces or not. That's a totally different debate. But this is the conservative option. It keeps market forces in play. It keeps healthcare largely privatized. This is, you know, famously Mitt Romney put this forward in Massachusetts. It worked great. So I think what this presidency is doing with President Trump's monomaniacal obsession with, frankly, undoing anything Obama touched is it's now driving a wedge between conservatives and the Republican Party. They're no longer necessarily congruent.
What I find just maddening as I watch this administration from afar is, you know, Trump has very much articulated an idea that, you know, if you work for me, you are going to toe a line and you are going to essentially do what I say and do what I tell you to do. And yet you have two of the most prominent members of his administration as recently as last weekend going on national television programs and essentially saying this man speaks for himself. In essence, you know, dividing or driving a further wedge between the, you know, the integrity of this administration. You know, and you made a comment in one of the Facebook Live segments that you did over the summer that you really feel it's high time for the people in this administration to either say, I repudiate you completely and I'm walking away, or being complicit in what's happening. And I wonder, instead of that, I wonder if men like Mathis, men like Kelly are saying, you know what? We got to keep as close to this fire as possible so that we can, when it really becomes a conflagration, we can put it out.
I agree with you. And actually, in all fairness, I've now changed my position on that. That was in the immediate aftermath of the absolutely ghastly events in Charlottesville, Virginia. Particularly right after the now infamous both sides press conference. Was that the Tuesday afterwards, or was that a Monday?
It was Monday or Tuesday. It was within 72-ish
Something
hours.
Like that. Yeah. But one of the things I'm actually impressed by, and I never thought it would happen this way, we are seeing the institutions of American government deal with this presidency the way white blood cells deal with an invasive bacteria or virus. Because what you're seeing is you're seeing the Department of Defense, the State Department, Homeland Security, in a way, almost cut the president of the United States as much out of decision-making as humanly possible. And in a way, that's actually kind of a healthy response. Mm-hmm. Because the reason Trump, even though officially the president could fire Secretary Mattis, he could fire Secretary McMaster, he could fire Secretary Tillerson. One of the reasons this administration is so woefully understaffed is he knows if he fires these people that require Senate confirmation, he'll never get anyone he wants in that job.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So in a way, they are sort of backstopping.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mattis's speech to the troops, by the way,
oh wow,
recently, that they need to hold the line.
Hold the line, yep. Yep.
Was brilliant, scary, and in some ways, I think, represented a lot of resilience.
Resilience it did, especially knowing that, you know, he's a smart man. He knows that there was a recording taking place of what he was saying. He knew it was going to get back to his boss. He knew it was going to get back to the power centers in Washington. You know, and the man didn't back down.
All right. Well, I mean, you're a former Marine general.
Yeah, there's a reason you're not backing down.
Say,
exactly.
That's not exactly their MO.
Backing down to a guy with bone spurs is not that big a deal, you know? This is this technically episode one
this
of
is the
Upon
inaugural,
Further Review?
inaugural
with the
broadcast.
Podcast Profs. I remember the title too. Did you notice that?
Upon further review.
So this is episode one, but the names and the faces, I mean, what they are, haven't changed.
I've had a great face for radio all my life. So this is good news.
It is indeed. He is Soren Fanning. I am Anthony Moretti, and keeping us on time and being our moral compass is John Roland, who is, do we have to make him graduate? Can we find a way to, pilfer the books a little bit and change
that
some
that tends to make the provost flustered and cross.
Yeah, that would not be a good thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
maybe
he can do like a grad program. We can keep him here for an extra year or two, We like him.
I think we might have to pick up student loan fees then.
Does tax reform succeed?
At this point, no. Because at this point, I think it's a 50-50 bet if tax reform even comes up in the Senate.
Does immigration reform succeed?
At this point, I'll be shocked if they can find a way to raise the debt ceiling for more than 3 months at a time.
Does this presidency or does this president do what he has promised and get rid of DACA?
Again, I doubt it. Mainly because the United States Senate, there are some senators, I'm looking at you, Dean Heller, who are...
He walked in?
Yeah. who have to face re-election in states with very large Latino populations. And even if they're not up for re-election this time, 2020 is looming right around the metaphorical corner.
Well, 2018 is the midterm elections are even closer. What I think, and I have been, and you have been, ever present in sort of criticizing this presidency for what it has done and what it hasn't done. I think there has to be a recognition that when it comes to dealing with the absolute horror that's unfolding in Houston, Texas, and environs, that to this point, this presidency has handled that situation not only, I think, I'll call it presidential, which is really not the word I'm looking for, but he's handled it in a very professional way. And I think part of the reason that's happening is he's done a couple of things very well. Number one, he stayed the heck out of Houston so far. We don't need the president there right now, boots on the ground, to borrow a phrase, because, we need the people there to get the immediate help that they need. But I think more importantly, he said to the people there, look, the federal government's going to be there for you. And, argue what the federal government's role should be or should not be, whatever. Those are policy issues. But you and I agree that, for lack of a better phrase, when the it hits the fan, the federal government is always the ally, not the enemy.
Well, correct. And actually, I would say I would praise the government's response, but I would do so almost in spite of the chief executive.
Could be.
FEMA doesn't even have a full-time director. And it's not because it's been filibustered. One hasn't been nominated yet. Mm-hmm. And by the way, we are recording on August 31st.
8 months into a presidency.
Come on now. I mean, this is officially ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And in spite of his self-aggrandizing little speech the other day, in general, does what he does best. He stays out of the way and goes golfing.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, maybe that's a really good thing.
Now, the Secret Service may be broke before the end of the year, though, with all
they're
the overtime
already broke.
They've already
blown through their budget.
That was one of the very small points of the summer, but I think something that deserves recognition. What about Robert Mueller in that investigation? We're seeing drip, drip, drip.
Right.
And again, I know based on what took place in Houston, that may seem like a very inappropriate metaphor to use, but... when does it all come crashing down?
Well, all right. So now, obviously, picking deadlines is a tricky business, as you well know.
Stop that. Just because I suggested that I thought that this presidency would end by resignation by September 1st. Don't remind me.
In all fairness, you got a little under 13 hours left, so that he may yet surprise us.
Mm.
But, okay.
Not counting on it.
This is my take on the Mueller investigation. Right now... the Russia scandal's hard to follow because Mueller is playing things very close to the vest, as he should.
Thankfully.
As he should. There are no leaks. He's doing this as the professional he is. He has a great team of investigators. We're picking up things, but we're picking up things sort of seismically.
Mm-hmm.
I think my guess would be this. I think sometime around by the latest St. Patrick's Day of next year, Mueller will issue his formal report.
Wow, can you imagine what Pittsburgh St. Patrick's Day parade's going to be like if that's the case? Oh, boy, I'm going to leave town.
But that's my guess. And honestly, at this point, given the intensity with which the president is attacking his own nominal party, I honestly believe that a lot of Republicans are just waiting for a justification to begin moving against him.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think the Mueller report, and this is a guy, bear in mind, Robert Mueller, he's going to dot all his I's, he's going to cross all his T's. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's taking his time for a good reason. This has to be thorough. If he recommends impeachment, I think that train's going to move forward very quickly.
Especially if you're right, and it carries over into 2018, and there is the potential, well, would be the reality by that point, of the Democrats hammering one after the other, after the other, after the other. This idea of an impeachable president is in office, and the Republicans aren't doing anything about it. And
exactly.
Look at what this guy has done, or more, maybe look what this guy has not done. Look at what he said, you know, and all of those sorts of things. So, and this anticipates the end of the program just a little bit. How does this presidency conclude?
Right now, if you'd asked me a week ago, I would have said generally he will remain in office for his entire first term. Given, however, the lashing out we've seen, particularly that horrid display last Tuesday in Arizona,
ooh,
where you know he was encouraging the crowd to actually cheer for the death of John McCain.
In his home state. I mean, not that, yeah, it would be, not that it would be appropriate elsewhere. Don't misunderstand me. But
right,
doing
but
that in Arizona.
This is just sort of the perverted cherry on top. Given the animosity that is rapidly building up between congressional Republicans and the president, I'm beginning to think that, again, they're waiting for a good, legal, justifiable reason to move against him. Not innuendo, not suspicion. I think the Democrats, a few of them, have tried to advance articles of impeachment already. I think they're frankly being A, premature, and B, somewhat idiotic about this.
Let me play devil's advocate. You're among the leaders of the Democratic. You're not, but in this hypothetical
right
scenario, you're among the leaders of the Democratic Party. Do you come together and say, we're going to stall and stall and stall and stall as much as we can so that we have this impeachment, potential impeachment crisis all the way through calendar year 2018?
I think you don't do what Mitch McConnell did, which is, you know, our main goal is to make Barack Obama one-term president. How'd that work out, by the way? You don't do that.
It didn't.
Yeah, it didn't. You don't do that. But I would, if I were advising the Democratic Party, I would say, hey, look, if he's going to put something forward that you actually think would be beneficial, you know, we keep hearing whispers of that infrastructure bill, which I'm convinced will never get out of committee.
Agreed.
But by all means, advance it. But I cannot fathom a party that has gone all in on sort of what Dennis Hastert called that 51% rule.
Mm-hmm.
Is going to put forth, I mean, one of the amazing things is the Democrats said over and over the summer that they would be more than happy to sit down and discuss changes to the Affordable Care Act to make it better. And Mitch McConnell throughout the summer steadfastly refused to even come to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever we do, we have to do without the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I think, you know, if you're a Democrat, yeah, if there's something you like, sure, extend the hand. But the Democrats right now have absolutely no incentive,
mm-hmm,
to help out the Republican Party or President Trump. And those two are increasingly becoming two separate things.
Two separate entities. And you have also sort of hanging over all of that the notion of, or the threat of, well, threat's too strong a word. What is good for party versus what is good for country?
Well, and the remarkable thing about that, and for, you know, people who may not be familiar who are listening, the debt ceiling is this artificial limit to how much money the government can borrow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, understand, in some ways, in a lot of ways, it's completely ridiculous because the Congress has already appropriated the money. We've already agreed to spend it. So, I mean, I've been in favor of simply abolishing a debt ceiling forever because mm-hmm. it's a stupid thing. It just comes up every now and then. You have to raise it or face, you know, an economic version of the Titanic. And the irony is, this is the one event where you're going to get all the Democrats pretty much in agreement to say, yeah, we need to raise the debt ceiling. Mm-hmm. The only time you're going to screw that up is you say, yeah, but you have to say, you know, include funding for this stupid border wall.
Yeah, attach something to it.
Stupid being my addition.
Addition, yes. You are listening to Upon Further Review with the Podcast Profs, the initial Upon Further Review. He is Soren Fanning. I am Anthony Moretti. John Roland is keeping us honest as our producer extraordinaire. Now, that would be something cool to put on a business card.
I think
producer
that should be.
Producer extraordinaire. Wouldn't that be good?
But I stop giving him ideas because he's going to show up next time with like a cattle prod and just, you know, that's how we'll, you
know, we'll
know that we've hit 30 you know, minutes
because you'll segment just hear me, over, you know?
And then I'll just fall over.
As you know, the college football season begins, well, technically began last weekend.
Right.
But really begins this weekend. And then the No Future League, as I like to call it, begins a week after that. We were reminded very bluntly this week, yet again, of the tremendous damage that is done to football players, especially
all athletes are at risk.
But yeah, they are.
Football players in particular.
Two events this week, though, really sort of struck me, and they both happened within just coincidentally within a couple of hours of each other. The New York Times released a story or an interview it had done with Ed Cunningham, who was for almost two decades a college football analyst for ESPN and ABC Sports, played college football, played a couple of years in the NFL as well. And Ed Cunningham said, I'm done. He said, I'm walking away from this job. And he said, I'm walking away from it because, you know, look, I am not denying I was part of it in the past. I take ownership of my X number of years involved with the game. He said, I am so afraid that I am at now this point essentially becoming a cheerleader and endorsing head injury upon head injury upon head injury. A very noble stand, one that I'll be very curious to see if others adopt alongside him. My assumption is most are not, or probably nobody else will. But then at almost the same time, the Hamilton Spectator, which is a Canadian daily newspaper, discussed or released a story discussing a two-year investigation it had done with a group of medical researchers at a university in Canada. What we've seen in previous research about concussions and football players was essentially after these players had passed.
Right.
What made this Hamilton Spectator story so, is that it involved players who are still living, generally men in their 40s and 50s. Summarizing it very briefly, the newspaper said that across the board, these men who are in their 40s and 50s have brain activity that is closer to men in their 80s and 90s. Just stunning.
Concussions age the brain.
Concussions not only age the brain, but they also, you know, you're talking about mental alertness, mental acumen, things you remember, things you see, how you respond to stimuli, these sorts of things. It may seem like an overly dramatic question, but are we reaching a tipping point where we're going to see the inevitable walking away from football becoming much more commonplace and less a kind of, ooh, look what he just did?
I would think so. And look, my problems with NCAA football are vast and well cataloged, particularly on this, you know, on our previous show.
Mm-hmm. Suffice to say, you think of the NCAA about as I think of the No Future League.
Well, you know, it's a fascinating experiment in 21st century indentured servitude. I'll give you that.
Mm-hmm. But you can make a case that both are to some extent, but continue.
Oh, I agree, actually. I think eventually, as we learn more, I think you're going to see more and more people. I think the career of a pro athlete in football is going to continue to shrink
mm-hmm.
because of this.
Voluntarily.
Just because, I mean, the risks are, I mean, it's like smoking at this point.
Yes.
If you do it, you know that you are, I mean, let's face it, the human skull is not intended to be a battering ram. That's not its purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're making Achilles' choice.
You know, and what, you know, many of the men who were interviewed in the story for The Spectator, you know, they said, look, we kind of knew we were taking risks back then. We didn't know the degree to the kind of risks there were. You know, and they didn't say this outright, but you could sort of read between the lines is, you know, if you're a 20-something young man today, how long do you want to do this? You know,
if at all.
And, you know, I wonder if we're looking at sort of two or three different issues here. One will be, which I would be very much in favor of, the idea of eliminating contact in youth football.
Yeah.
All right. So forget all this other stuff. I mean, and I know people are going to say, well, then it's going to be flag football, and that's not real football. Baloney. It's real football.
It's real football. I'm personally, and this is going to make me very unpopular, I'm in favor of making it all flag football.
Well,
at this point.
Because
I mean, it's helpful to think of the brain as a meat computer, but one that can rewire itself.
Yep.
And one of the things these studies have found is that when people start showing early signs of, say, dementia or Alzheimer's symptoms, if you haven't had that many concussions, the brain can actually rewire itself pretty well.
Right.
But if you have, it loses that ability. It's like you've shaken too much loose.
Yep. Yep. Well, so, and as you know, you have your first, you're much more susceptible to your second, then to your third, then to your fourth. It becomes sort of a snowball effect going
downhill. The more things go wrong, the more things will go wrong. By the way, speaking of things going wrong, if we could just return to Houston real quick before we go.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we are now reaping with, one of the reasons Houston is in so much trouble is simply it's grown too fast for where it is. Houston is built on a swamp. Now, I grew up in a city built on a swamp, Chicago. But Chicago doesn't get hurricanes. And one of the reasons they're having so many problems is wetlands can absorb that extra water real easily. But obviously, they don't have wetlands now. They have strip malls and concrete and asphalt.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is all that, it won't allow the water to seep into the ground, and it all has to go somewhere.
Somewhere.
And so they've, over the past 4 days, Houston has received more rain than they usually get in a year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the numbers are staggering.
The latest estimate is that Houston is probably going to get 50 inches of rain before the week is out. 50.
Right. I mean, and that's like a 10-year-old height.
I mean, that's 4 foot two, right?
Yeah.
Is that 4 foot two? Scary thought. Quick question before to wrap up your very quick answer on when does this presidency end and by what date and how?
Okay.
What's the over under?
Well, if we presume the Mueller report comes out by St. Patrick's Day.
Okay.
That is going to give the Republicans in Congress a huge incentive to either lash themselves to the Trump mast or move quickly to get rid of him before the midterms, because it will become a midterm issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it could very well drive up turnout, what's usually a low turnout election.
Mm-hmm.
So I have two dates. I have the earlier and the later.
All right.
I would argue Memorial Day, June-ish, 2018 at the earliest.
Okay.
Otherwise, if he doesn't resign and if he's not impeached, and believe me, I believe that the Mueller report will reveal that he has committed impeachable acts. I don't know that for sure. Now I'm going to wait for the evidence, but based on what I'm seeing, that's my suspicion. But if the Republican Congress does not act on that, he's going to be in office, mark my words, until 2021.
So it is either...
At least.
It is either June of 18 or January of 2021.
Correct.
That's a pretty wide window.
Well, I agree, it's not a range. I think it either happens one or the other.
And the only way that changes is if the the Democrats gain control of the House and the Senate in 18 and then can therefore bring forth their own articles of impeachment. But again, that's not a guarantee it's going to succeed.
But even if they gain control of the Senate... 51 votes, that's not enough.
You need
67.
To make it happen.
So if this, now it may very well be that the Mueller report comes out and says there's nothing here. Fine, we all go home. But I find it highly unlikely.
Speaking of going home, we got to wrap up and head back to our offices and do our real jobs.
I know, we got a deadline now.
I know. Right. He is Soren Fanning. I am Anthony Moretti. That wraps up episode one of...
Upon Further Review
with
the Podcast Profs.
Indeed. See you next week.